Beckman. So it is Tom Osmond here on KLBB, Club 1220. You know, I can't get over, Kyle, the enthusiasm that the meteorologist has for our weather right now. I share it. And you're smiling, so that can't be a bad thing.
No, it's wonderful out.
Go out and frisbee golf today?
Yeah, we could. Well, I could.
The polar plunge should be this Saturday. The polar plunge is next Saturday, and I'm guessing it's going to be 20 below next Saturday. I can't think of the last polar plunge. It's not been below zero.
Yeah, I haven't done those.
No, I don't do them either. I just promote them. But it's a good cause. You should do it and support KLBB, but I think the last three Saturdays they've done polar plunge. It has been, you know, record cold weather, but or at least record enough to keep me far away from there. And I went out there the last 2 years and watched it. Of course, I was, you know, bundled up with eight different layers and was all the anxious to step away. But you know, Tom and Jenna and Sarah, they're all jumping in, right?
As far as I know, yeah.
And you're not?
No, okay. Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, you got a year to prep for next year. here at Blackfoot Twin Cities, we have lots of guests that have been on camera, and they're very recognizable faces and names. Unfortunately, sometimes, and this comes through just the way the TV world works, there's a lot of names that you never, they're not household names, but they're very important to make this product. The number one station in town, no matter what that is from week to week, could not be there without tons of people behind the scenes making it happen. And one of those men today is Dana Benson. Dana has been a TV, a veteran, we'll call you a news, what could your title be? If you had to say what your title is throughout your career, what would it be?
I guess I would say producer.
Producer, mostly. Okay. Yeah. Okay, a veteran producer of Channel 11, Channel 5, Channel 4, Channel 9. I think every station in town you've had a hand in making them successful, which is not many can say that. Many people have fled after so many different stations. But you've had long careers at each of these stations.
Right. I keep saying if I can do Channel 2 before I retire, I'll have made the clean sweep.
Well, you know, they're doing the pledge drive every week now, so I think there's a lot of production opportunity right there.
I think you're right. Right.
And then Channel 17, too. You're a local from Minnesota, correct? You went to Winona State.
And I did.
You got what many of us yearned for, an internship at one of the big TV stations in town, which at the time wasn't exactly your marquee station to work at, but it's still TV.
Right. It was a great opportunity because it was Channel 11. In the days before it was CARE, it was WTCN mm-hmm. back then. And it was a small independent station with a small news operation. And so I got an internship there, and it was great because I got to do everything.
There's a generation of people that don't understand, don't remember, that Channel 11 was not the NBC affiliate. It was, for a generation, it was the independent affiliate. It was the Mickey Mouse Club and reruns, and Gil Amundsen did the news, and it mm-hmm. was a very thin news operation. But I'm guessing, much like, you know, many smaller operations, it was a great place to learn how to do everything about TV, because the production was you know, nothing short of what was going on at the other stations in town. In fact, Casey Jones, there's a lot of, you know, production, you know, a lot of programming that is memorable and beloved. And you were, they had a new facility down over in mm-hmm. Golden Valley, the same one they're in right now. And how old were you at that point?
Oh, let me see. I was in college. It would have been, I was maybe 20.
Was it a paid internship? Was it
no.
A, okay. So
no.
you weren't making the big bucks then.
I was able to shoot a story and they put it on air. Bless their hearts.
Do you know what the first story was?
Yeah. It was about the new, at that time, Minnesota Zoo getting beluga whales.
That's right. And did you take the monorail with your camera out?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, the now defunct monorail. Right. Minnesota Zoo, of course, that was a big controversial product at the time, but you're on there, and were you a journalism major at Winona?
Yes. Their program was called Mass Communication, mm-hmm. but it had an emphasis on really broadcast journalism.
So you're this internship, and was this at the time? Now, did they switch affiliations by the time you were there?
No, I did my internship and left.
Okay.
And then I graduated, and my first job actually was in Mankato at a radio station.
Okay.
But while that was happening, that's when the affiliation switch took place. And you mentioned Gil Amundsen. I was still on a list that he had, and they had to hire 100 people all at once.
There's a list of people. In fact, we have some video at tcmedianow.com. But I know that, you know, Gil had went from having a pretty comfortable news operation with it. Did 1 half-hour news a day. They didn't have the pressures that 4 and 5,
right.
5 or even 9 had. Also, now you're a big league NBC affiliate, and you have to produce 3 newscasts. You have mm-hmm. to hire a new staff. You have to, and they tried pretty dang hard to do that. There's some names that we know today. Bernie Grace was part of that group.
Right.
Jane Mitchell, who now is on CNN every day, was part of that group. And you came back.
Yeah, I came back. I was hired initially as a writer, was there for about a year, became a producer sometime during that year, and then went to WCCO.
The question that people are going to ask, what does a producer do? I look at the credit roll, and people do. They see eight producers sometimes for a newscast. What does a producer do for the news?
Well, essentially, you're in charge of all of the content and much of the writing. And then when the show is on the air, you're in charge of timing it and making sure it gets off the air when it's supposed to. But there's a lot of decision-making in that process, which stories to include, which to leave out. And sometimes there'd be debates about that internally. But essentially, that's it. You would generally have some oversight from an executive producer or a manager of some kind. But within that, you would be in charge of every element of the newscast, pretty much.
Well, especially with three newscasts a day or two or three at a time, there's probably a lot of decisions you had to make that there was no oversight from the executives. You just did it.
Right.
And I'm sure you probably heard more so after the fact than before the fact.
Yeah, and generally, and I tried to be this way too when the roles were reversed and I was the manager, but as long as the producer had a rationale and could explain that rationale, you might not agree with the way they put the newscast together, but they were thinking and there was a reason for it, and sometimes we'd have that kind of discussion, but generally, as long as that was happening, it was okay.
So I'll ask a question, you know, if that reveals you want to. Now, we're thinking about the early 80s right now at Channel 11. What was the salary for a producer, for a writer at that point? Because I know that we know some writers here that are working in Hollywood, other places. We know what they're making.
Right.
What were you making to do the news at Channel 11 as a writer?
Well, to be honest, I don't remember the initial writer salary. When I was promoted to a producer, I think it was 12 or 13,000, something like that.
So that was big bucks at the time.
Yeah, well, I was happy. I was a young single guy, and it was great.
I was looking at some articles recently. The big contracts are made for Channel 4 in the 70s. This is where salaries are good, and
right.
You know, some of the salaries, $25,000 a year for the marquee anchors, and you take flash forward a few years, and the million-dollar contracts are being signed. But
right.
you're doing what you love doing, and did your passion fuel from it, or were you made you want to continue doing it?
It did. It was really unbelievable to me to be doing that at that age. I had thought that maybe at the peak of my career I might be working at WCCO, and I got hired there in my second or third job when I was 24 years old.
And let's get a little segue with this. Channel 11 was an enjoyable experience because we have a lot of people that people that stuck through it, but it was not the most. There's a lot of management changes and some ownership changes at Channel 11 for a good period of time.
Right. Yeah, there was a lot of good and bad in that time. Everyone came together in the newsroom as new employees all at once, which was really strange and really fun. So people formed friendships. On air, the product had some growing pains and took some time to reach where it is today. So we were kind of learning as we went, but staff-wise, I met my wife there. She had been hired as a videotape editor.
Okay.
And so that was the highlight for me.
I believe that was a comment on Facebook, I think. I do this thing occasionally where the credits are so few on newscasts sometimes. I do post some credits when I find them on a news broadcast and try to tag people that are following the social media sites. So that's pretty cool. A lot of good TV romances that have started, both on air and off air.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still, I assume to this day, you're still happily, coupled. And
yeah, later this year will be our 30th anniversary, so it's gone well.
Well, thank you, Channel 11.
Right.
So you go to Channel 4 then, and what was your role at Channel 4 when you moved there?
I was hired as producer of the 6 o'clock.
Okay. So you're working with Dave Moore, the legend of TV news. Now, was that a intimidating experience? 24 years old, you walk in, and all of a sudden, now you're going to tell Dave Moore how to do the news.
It was, to some extent, and beyond just that, this was at the time of their old building in the basement newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
So it was cramped quarters and a kind of an interesting environment just because of that. But also, you'd look around the room and you were awestruck by the people you're suddenly working with.
Let's take a step off from that old building on 9th Street. People would recognize today the 111th Street on Nicollet Mall, that very nice, that Mankato stone building right now with the plaza. The old building, this was the old Radio City Theater building on 9th Street.
Right.
And the legends I hear, it was a basement newsroom with a lot of fire hazards, but a lot of smoking going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some pictures and video of it. It looks like if you saw the show Hoarders, what it would look like. But there's people working there into a functional, top stellar newsroom.
Mm-hmm. It was a very interesting. People like Mark Rosen, who happens to be very tall, would constantly have to duck just to get through doorways, and it was just that kind of environment. The producer area where I worked was kind of a back room that had a big table, and the producers of the various newscasts sat around that table,
mm-hmm.
5, 6, and 10, and it was handy that way because we could share information and stories.
Mm-hmm.
But it was I remember it very well. It was a wood-paneled small room. It had an air conditioner in the wall, but on the other side of that wall was the boiler room or something. So the air from the boiler room was coming in. And then we had, as I said, we had three producers sitting there, but two chairs. And so one of us would have to take turns sitting on the trash can to put the newscast together. So any notion of glamour back then, you really see what it was really like.
Well, and for those of us who watch the screen, you get no idea of the grit that goes into watching a newscast like that. And the best thing is when you get these kinds of behind the scenes looks. And again, I think that in the '80s, the big thing was to get this CNN style newsroom where there's
right.
tons of different desks in the background and computer screens. No, this was a throwback to the newspaper days when. You think about it, TV was creating the image of news and radio. And a lot of guys that were even in TV back in, when you started there, we'll talk about the Dave Moore and these guys. These are guys that came from the radio era, that came from a part where TV was as experimental as the internet is today.
Right.
And luckily they had found voices in that, but still not mature to the point where electronic news gathering was as slick of a process as it was now or even a few years ago.
Right. Oh, yeah, there were many hurdles, if only just to get the film developed and on the air was a challenge.
Was your first story on film?
It was. That intern story I did at Channel 11 was a film story.
I'm always amazed by thinking that you shoot news film and somehow you actually have a lab in studio to be able to get that film developed that day when
right.
It was always a challenge to get film developed, your Super 8 film, within 3 or 4 days to get it back, and you had someone doing 16mm film every day at a
yeah.
lab.
Yeah. No, it was...
And then editing it, too.
Yep. Editing it together and time to get it on the air was always an amazing thing to me. Yeah. Videotape was revolutionary when it came in.
I can only imagine that this... Well, yes and no, because the only thing I've asked guys that do operate cameras, you had videotape, but yet now your backs are being broken by these huge cameras you had to pull on. The film cameras are pretty
right.
light.
Right.
You bring the video cameras out, and it was great to be able to take the tape out and pop it into the machine, but
mm-hmm.
To break your backs and carrying around the equivalent of... you remember the old boom boxes, Kyle, the ones that guys carry around and listen to their beats with. This is what these cameras look like. And you look at these poor guys. I get this B-roll yeah. of these press conferences, and you see the big logos. I mean, you had enough to actually put a whole billboard on the back of your camera.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they were huge.
But I'm guessing, from a production standpoint, you were able to do, pump out a lot more stories when the video era came in.
Yeah, the editing time alone was shortened considerably. So that made it a little better. Not as much as it is today, because with digital editing, you can shift scenes around in a second. But it was more of a process back then. But still, it was an improvement in time.
Our guest today is Dana Benson. Dana is a veteran news producer here in town at all of the major stations in town. With respect to the Channel 4 newsroom, and I actually have some audio I'm going to play after the commercial break when they actually closed down the Ninth Street office. The story I always hear from is the elevator story when you're going up to the elevator. Now, was the studio upstairs and the newsroom was downstairs, and it was about a 5-minute elevator ride up to the studio?
It was a slow elevator. You're right. The newsroom was in the basement, and the studio, I believe, was on the 5th floor.
Okay.
And so it was a challenge, especially for the on-air folks, because if you were running late, you could take the elevator and take the slow ride, but if you ran, you'd get to the studio out of breath and have to go on the air that way. So it was a rough call.
Well, that would explain sometimes I see these bumps you have during a movie,
mm-hmm.
and I think that they're kind of panting as they give it.
Right.
Must have been watching the movie with everyone else, and then they had to run upstairs to,
right.
Say big story at 10. So you were at Channel 4. Now you started out as a writer, and then you actually your role, or could you go as a producer at Channel 4?
I did start as a
okay.
producer there.
Okay.
Yeah.
6 p.m. news, and did your role expand then to do additional newscasts, or how did your role expand over the course of 12 years?
It changed over time. During the time I was there, then I produced all the shows, the 5, the 10. They had just started the 5 shortly before I got there.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were saying, they created that different environment by putting some news or some desks together in
yep.
the newsroom, and it was interesting to see the newsroom happening behind them. So that was kind of a new thing back then.
Well, it's this, I think, and I could be incorrect, I think that CNN kind of started this, where you really feel you're watching immediate news if you see someone in the background typing a story. And then you get you hear that typing, you hear that grinding of the work. What I always find humorous is, well, first of all, Mike, here's my question for you, the producer, the inside guy. And you're watching these updates. Does everyone off camera know they're on camera and they're staging this thing? So they're actually staging typing, they're staging walking over and putting paper on someone's desk.
No, you know, that kind of activity, I would say, was pretty genuine.
Okay.
The newsroom's in operation behind them.
Mm.
But when you say, were people aware they were on the air? Sure. Did they have to walk through the shot right then? Probably not.
I always wonder how casual and fly on the wall that really is when you see everyone backstage or, you know, back in the set.
Because you have to be aware of it so that you don't holler across the room at somebody or that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in terms of what they were doing, no, that was real.
There's a good scene, and someone pointed this out on Facebook. One of these breaking news things that someone's coming out wiping their hands, probably from freshening up at some point, and you get the true grit of the news.
Right.
Kyle, let's take a break. We'll come back with Dana Benson. And actually, I'll play some audio from the old Channel 4 building the day it was being closed down to the new studios on Nicollet Mall, which I think is some pretty good audio, which will match what Dana's talking about here in Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with our guest Dana Benson. Get some audio here, Kyle. I'm going to play this audio. This is the final days of Channel 4's old newsroom. This is when really the behind-the-scenes action of a newscast was taking place. And it was a big story. Channel 4 had built this brand-new studio over on Nicollet Mall where it still stands today. And they were leaving the old studio, so let's take a listen.
Well, sir, you are witness tonight to this, our final broadcast from the Palace of Mirth here on 9th Street. We have flourished here for 34 years, the last 10 of which have defied the most lenient of environmental impact statements. Karen Boris is about to guide us through those areas of our newsroom you were not shown when our promotion people took you through.
Someone long ago decided we should produce our news shows in the basement and broadcast them six floors up. But don't worry, there's only one elevator.
Hey, tell them to release the elevator now.
The human needs and services in this building.
Hey, release that elevator!
The elevator ride takes 42 seconds from liftoff to orbit. No one has ever clocked Roger Nelson.
Roll Baker sound.
This is CEO Television, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Base Mini 2, bud.
Yeah.
First of all, let me tell you that the parade is going to be at least a half hour late.
A fire inspector once came here to be interviewed and ended up writing a citation on the place.
Well, you guys ready to feed me something?
I'm still waiting for the tape to come back yet.
Oh, terrific.
There is no logical progression. It all happens at the same time and in public. The primping is in public and the lunching is in public. The news set makes a dandy place to eat. There is no privacy even in a room clearly labeled women, which is to be expected in a business where men wear makeup.
I have no eyebrows, see? Whatever you see here has been drawn.
Bob? Bill?
You see it there? I'm backing it up.
Righto.
Caroline doesn't want to do five, but I think an appropriate live shot, as long as we're making a big deal about this.
When a place is this ratty, they don't care how the inmates decorate the walls. It is a little like a college dorm at age 30.
For you. What's the plan?
Buenos Aires.
I don't hear anything in the way of audio.
3, 2, 1. At 6:30 this morning, the final roll call was held in the old brick building.
Should Minneapolis ever be hit by a bomb, we could go on recording voice tracks. This place floods when it rains, and you hear it loud and clear when a toilet is flushed in the adjacent men's room.
Stand by.
This is the newsroom. People actually worked here until the art department moved out the desk and redid the newsroom to look like a newsroom. The people are now out of sight. What we have here is a basement with ceilings so low, even OSHA was embarrassed.
Oh, you think you have problems.
Yeah, that's Fritz. He's growing by leaps and bounds.
Oh, man, this is not easy working down here.
And now for the surprise. I will miss this old building, because in an industry where sparkle and slick are everything, this place is a dose of reality. It's hard to get a big head about what you do if you work in a leaky basement and share a desk. I worry that the new building is going to tempt us with sparkle and slick, and it may, but the reality is very little of what we do in a building. There's very little breaking news in any newsroom. This old place has taught us that buildings aren't important. We're moving to a new building, but the people aren't changing. With photographer Bill Kemplin, Karen Boris, WCCO Television News in the basement.
There you go. You may even see Dana Benson on that video.
I think I was in there a couple places.
One of us can saw that video.
Wow, that is so fun to look at, though. All the people in there and the just revisiting that environment. Much fun.
If you want to watch this, this is on YouTube. You go to WCCO New Digs. It's on YouTube. It's from September 12, 1983. And everything Dana's described, now I've actually got the visual effect here, the old paneling. And you might even see Dana Benson walk through the hallways and knock on some doors. Don Shelby getting his makeup on. Mark Rosen, trying to lean to walk through. That's a great video.
Right. Oh, it is. Just takes you right back there.
So you went to the new Channel 4 Studios, Space Control. I at least love the name, Space Control, and it was all this modern, Star Wars-esque, these terms that were being used. Satellites, choppers. Right.
It was all new.
We had a conversation before the show started, and I asked, does any TV stations in town have a chopper anymore? Does Channel 9 have a chopper anymore?
I don't believe so.
That was the thing for a while. Is you had a chopper, and Channel 11 got a few awards by having their chopper out of the tornado that fateful summer day. But the chopper, I guess, with all the cameras around town now, and the fact that everyone has the drone cameras, the chopper is not going to be much needed anyway. So a good career at Channel 4, and then you made a leap over to Channel 9. What was the change in motivation, if you don't mind sharing?
Sure. Well, I'd been at CCO for about 12 years at that point, produced all the shows, done some other special projects and that kind of thing, and had kind of run its course for me. I was looking for what's next.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Channel 9, kind of like Channel 11 years before, was an independent station with a smaller news staff. They had an hour-long newscast at 9 o'clock, and that was all they had.
Mm-hmm.
And they were looking to improve that and become more competitive. So they were looking for an executive producer to go and help with that project. And so I interviewed with them. They offered me the job, and I took it. I think some of my longtime colleagues at CCO thought I was out of my mind.
Well, say, did you think for yourself at a point, like, what did I just do?
Right, yeah.
When you took the job. Because, and again, a little context, Channel 9 right now, you can tell the difference between Channel 9 and 4 right now. They're both network affiliates owned by their major network parent companies. Both produce a lot of programming, both have a lot of influence from, and I'm not saying this is a disparaging thing, but they both are highly flash in production value. Channel 9 was mostly local movies and sitcoms, and they weren't even a Fox affiliate at that point. They were pure independent, and they did an hour-long newscast of Rod Grams, a future U.S. senator. It was to be honest with you, for our family, it was like, well, we didn't change the channel after the rerun movie we watched that night.
Right. Well, I should add, though, that as an independent station, they were wildly successful.
Oh, no, I don't disparage it for those that are in the news business, you are. That wasn't their bread and butter.
Right. And so they wanted to make some improvements there. And I looked at it as a great challenge and something that would re-energize me. And so I jumped into that. As it turned out, within a year then, the news director left, and I ended up with that job. So it wound up being a nice step for me.
Brought in some talent from California, Gary Rebstock. Many people remember him, and he was also in a couple different movies too. Robin Robinson was the anchor there.
Right. Yep. And boy, a lot of other people have been there for so long.
Jeff Ballion's still there.
Yep. Jeff's there. Some of the other people. Jeff was there when I got there, but some of the people I hired while I was there are still there. So it's great to see them.
So you brought Jeff Passel back then to do the.
I did.
That was a good move. He's still he's still there, and
I have to credit my general manager at that time, Stu Swartz, who really initially thought of that idea and thought we should explore it, and so we did, and it worked out.
Son of Don Schwartz, and I'm guessing, and by the way, and Jeff's not a good friend of TC Media now, but bringing the sportscaster back to do news, well, that had been a type of what I thought, that's an unconventional idea.
Yeah.
But now I think, you know, we have Randy Shaver, we have, you know, Bob Bruce, a lot of these guys who did sports became successful news anchors.
Right, and from our standpoint at that time, Jeff was hugely known in the market. He was interested in bringing his family back. And so it was a win-win.
And you don't get much more Minnesota than like Jeff Passel.
Right.
He knows the people. And plus, it doesn't bad to know someone who knew all the Vikings and mm-hmm. North Star players, Twins players, to have them on the...
Huge contacts all over. Yep.
Exactly. And I think Tom Stewart came over to run your... Ted Canova came over to run your...
Right.
Was that before or after your time?
It was towards the end of my time. He was there as assistant news director, and when I left, he took over as news director.
Because you were there during the Fox affiliation change, because it was UPN, and then this is some very inside TV language, but Fox actually purchased a group of stations, and all of a sudden you became a Fox affiliate. You became a network affiliate again.
Right. Yes. You're right. That whole, the UPN days, that was really kind of a network, if you will, created by the previous owners of the station.
Mm-hmm.
And it was moderately successful. But, yeah, it was a major change when Fox bought the station and many, many changes came. And actually, shortly thereafter was when they bought WFTC, Channel 29, and they had a newscast at that time. They were competing against us at KMSP. And so right around the tail end of my time there, we merged those two news staffs together at the KMSP building.
The advantage you had at one point was, and I remember this actually was quoted in the paper, there was at one point one 9 o'clock newscast, and then Channel 45 created one, Channel 29 created one.
Right.
There were four different newscasts at 9 o'clock at one point that you were competing against.
Right, yeah. They were popping up all over the place.
But Channel 9 did pretty well.
Yeah, they always did well at 9 o'clock. When I came over and we started making changes, they were doing fairly well. They didn't necessarily have the resources the other stations did.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of what they put on the air with what they had, they were doing pretty well. But we needed to take them up a notch in terms of becoming competitive.
What was the biggest change you brought when you came to Channel 9 from your days to Channel 4? What do you think your impact was by being there?
Well, a couple of things. I think there were maybe some more focus on storytelling, visuals, highlighting, mm-hmm. great video, great audio. And also, over the years, we expanded the newsroom greatly we created a morning show that's still running mm-hmm. and a 10 p.m. show. So we added people and in the process added resources that then would snowball and we could become more competitive that way.
With the changing habits, and this is now we're getting to the point where Internet is now prevalent. Internet and the papers are taking we had Don Effenberg around last week and the... we agree that papers are always going to be part of our news gathering process. The brand exists, but news habits are changing because Internet is becoming more prevalent. The 24-hour, not only the CNNs, but the Fox News, the headline news, you're competing now with 24-hour news cycles right now.
Right.
What was the biggest change that you had to adjust to when you're not just doing one quality 5, 6, and 10 show, you're doing pretty much quality 24/7. You have to have a staff prepared to be able to do breaking news all the time.
Right.
There's no off time now.
Right. And it's funny, that awareness dawned slowly. I remember at mm-hmm. KMSP, this would have been, the first few years I was there. So early 90s.
Yep.
I remember when we decided, hey, maybe we should have a website. And then we created it, and what do you do?
KMSP/.net. And no one thought you should actually have a simple one. There should be, a really complicated one to go into.
Right, yeah. And then the question was, okay, then we have a website. What do we do with it? And so these things evolved over those years. But, yeah, you're right. Today it's a whole different animal.
Well, do you think it took the industry by blindside a little bit? Because I think that Don, Effenberger and others we've talked in the paper industry, they agree. Newspapers try to pretend that the Internet wasn't going to really affect them. And do you think TV had the same, did they embrace it first? Or do you think they had the same kind of problem? Like, we don't really want to get involved with this computer stuff.
There might have been some of that, but it's interesting. I think just watching that evolve and companies like Internet Broadcasting would spring up and they would market themselves to stations and basically try to give them a turnkey operation if they've, I don't know what to do with a website. What do I do with it? Well, we'll run it for you, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those resources kind of came online as it developed.
That was RT Redbook's big company, wasn't it? That was one of his innovations of the 90s. I think that he helped Channel 4 create their Channel 4000 and news gathering on a novel thing called the computer.
Yeah, imagine that.
We were chatting last night a little bit about everyone now sounds old now. But we were talking about, remember actually dialing up the internet to go on to, you got 10 hours of AOL for 10, 20 bucks, and you thought that was the most fascinating thing in the world. You actually go on this internet thing and look up things that actually had no relevance to what you were doing that day.
Right, yeah. And you'd wait 5 minutes for the
busy
noise
signals.
From the moment.
Oh, yeah.
You know what's interesting, though, talking about the internet and the development, more recently, the last few years, I was teaching at the journalism school at the U of M.
Mm-hmm.
And what really struck me at that time was even the students in, I was teaching broadcast news classes. Many of the students who were in my class would admit they don't watch news on TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not relevant to them. And that was, they kind of liked the notion of playing around with TV. Mm-hmm. That was fun. But in terms of actual use of news, no. So one of my concerns long term is I saw those students, young adults, and they're all about mobile devices, mm-hmm. and primarily and online news. And so I think TV stations and broadcasters really realize that they have an issue there,
mm-hmm.
because it's a generational thing. When people my age are gone, there's going to be a whole generation out there who are not in the habit of sitting down and watching a TV newscast.
Well, I think a couple things have changed. I think, first of all, people are working much later in the day than they used to. I think that people, you know, we have dual income families that are picking up daycare kids and a lot more activities now than people even did a generation ago. So the fact of being able to be home to watch it,
right?
The family life is unconventional now. Not to be generally sweeping, but you know, having all four or five kids at the table and having a dinner time—that's a rarity nowadays. If it's it's one parent families, it's or you're wrapped up in activities. When you watch the commercials on the network TV news shows, you can tell they're not targeting a group of people that are 18 to 50. It's
right.
it's an older group, and by the way, many of our audience here is that. So it's you know, it is what it is right now.
Right.
But it's right now to these brands, whether it be a part of Pioneer Press, Tribune, or 4 or 5 or 9. How do you sustain yourself in the next generation? One thing I've noticed, even from doing TCMedianow.com, is people want instant gratification. If you have to wait for something to pop up on your phone or your computer, you're done. They want the video to be playing automatically and short and fast and sweet. I put these clips on that are 60 minutes long. No way.
Right.
I put a Red Owl commercial on for 30 seconds. People think it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that you know, with the tweeting and the Facebooking, people want to see short little headlines and bits, and they want to be able to make their own conclusions or be able to do their own judgment, which in a way, it's good to be lots of information out there. Another way, we get a lot of half-informed opinions out there, and big news stories the last few years, I think, have taken strange legs of their own without having a lot of factual basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone's a journalist now.
What now? As someone, and we'll get to the academics thing in a moment here, but as someone who's teaching our youth of America today, what do you think the biggest challenge right now is in? You know, right now you're working with a group of students who don't even really understand the concept of, well, what traditional broadcast news is, and that, you know, how they work with the newspaper, and you know, what's the challenge with that?
Right. Well, what I would tell them is it's all about good storytelling, good writing, all those skills that applied on television and in newspapers are going to be the same skills needed to produce any visual story or any kind of story, mm-hmm. online or on any screen, really. Same principles apply. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're right. The notion to them of I have to be in front of my TV at 6 o'clock, mm-hmm. to see a newscast. No, they don't want to do that. But the same ideas in terms of how you put a compelling story together and a memorable story, highlighting great visuals and audio, still apply. So those skills are mm-hmm. worth learning and worth teaching.
This is a group of students again who have no idea right now what it's like in a pre-internet world. And this is we're going to find this slowly, little by little, that those of us remember that. What you did on Saturday night when you didn't have anything else going on, well, you read a book or you popped the video in, and you didn't binge on Netflix, and right now, TV is such a, I find an interesting, viewing habits now, because no one watches TV with commercials. They record them DVR, they, time shift them, or they watch an entire year of TV in one afternoon,
right.
In one evening. It's completely changed, I think, in the last even 5 years, and
mm-hmm.
I think that even, especially network TV, didn't see this coming at all.
No, I would agree with you. Traditional network broadcasters are scrambling right now, I think.
I got a quick clip here I want to play. This is from 1994-95. This is not that long ago, but this is the Today Show discussing what this strange invention internet called.
Background 56-pass, I wasn't prepared to translate that. As I was doing that little tease. That little mark with the A and then the ring around it?
At?
See, that's what I said. case that she thought it was about.
Yeah. Oh.
But I've never heard I'd always seen the remark, but never heard it said. And then it sounded stupid when I said it. Violence at NBC.
I heard it around or about in the lunchroom.
See, there it is. Violence at NBC, GE.com. I mean...
Well, what Allison should know.
What is the internet
that
anyway?
Internet is that massive computer network. The one that's becoming really big now.
What do you mean? That's big? What do you write to it? Like mail?
No, a lot of people use it and communicate. I guess they can communicate with NBC writers and producers. Allison, can you explain what internet is?
No, she can't say anything in 10 seconds or less.
Allison will be in the studio shortly. What does it mean?
This is not that long ago. This is 20 years ago.
I've not seen that.
They are confused. What is internet?
Wow. And what is that little symbol? That's great.
I was telling you before. This is how you did not figure out until much later how to market your website. .ge.com-nbc/
Right.
It just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back with Dana Benson. We'll talk a little bit more about his days in producing TV news and plus some of his academic and other products here in Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond. And by the way, I want to make sure everyone knows that tcmedianow.com, it's just one word. You don't need to do any slashes or, and that's on the internet. This is
what's that com on
that new thing now?
I don't know.
I said less than 10 seconds, Brian. Don't worry about that. You went back to Channel 4. You went back home. What brought that about? You had Master Channel 9. They were actually beating some of their old rivals, and then you decided to go back to
back to
Nicollet Mall.
Yeah, the transition at KMSP was done. Fox had come in. I felt that my time there had kind of run its course, and understandably, you know, new owners want to put their own team in place, so we shook hands and I left. But so then in assessing what I would do next, I thought in my mind at that time that that was going to be my window to try something new and maybe even leave the field. But I was the only one who had that idea, I think, so nothing came of that. And ultimately then CCO had an opening for an executive producer of their 10 o'clock show, so... I took that and went back there for a couple of years.
And was that was some of the same faces and names still there when you came back the second time?
Yeah, there were a few new people, but many old friends, which was great. It was a little bit surreal, though, because now they've remodeled the newsroom. That happened while I was there. But when I went back, nothing had changed. The phones on the desks were the same. The desks were the same. It was like a time warp. Did the last 12 years really happen or not?
You wake up like, was it all a dream? Was this like Dallas and I just woke up the last 12
right.
years?
Right.
Yeah, because our guest today, Dana Benson, they took that. The big thing in the 90s was window to the world. The Today Show kind of started this where you're going to have your, and they did this in the 50s, and then they decided to do it in the 90s. You'll do your newscast on Nicollet Mall, and you can see people, you know, waving and making faces at you from behind. And then... which is surprising. Channel 4 actually spent a lot of money on a news set outdoors on a big pavilion down on Nicollet Mall and 11th Street. And, you know, pretty much do most of their newscasts on this. They got their set right finally. No more chroma keys and no more hot tubs. They actually had a really advanced modern set right out in Minneapolis.
Right, yeah. And that was nice at that point. And now since then, since I left, they've created some new sets as well. So it's kind of a constant change process, I think.
And then you thought you'd cross off all these places you worked. There's one more you hadn't got a paycheck from. So you called Stanley Hubbard and said, "I need to add this number to my resume." And
that's
he said,
right.
"Come on over."
That's right. They were looking for someone to run their investigative unit in the newsroom at that point. And that had a lot of appeal to me. That, out of everything I'd done, I had not done that.
Because you didn't have, that wasn't your specialty. You'd done a lot of general production, a lot of management.
Right.
So what spurred your interest in doing investigation? These are these sweeps months, you know, the five parts, you know, take your pick, and some of them have been rather entertaining, some of them have been serious, some of them have been award-winning. Some of them we roll our eyes at. One of my favorites of all time is the housekeepers that don't wear clothes, and it was an investigative story, fuzzy black and white camera. And
yep. Yeah, some of those, you know, the curtain's been pulled back now. The public's onto that.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, you would try to put stories together that would get noticed. And, yep, there were some hits and some misses there.
favorite one also is this is Channel 4 one, and you might have been there at the time. It was Amelia gets on the air. It says, "Tonight, the pictures Norm Coleman does not want you to see." So of course I'm sold. Well, his dentist put pictures of him on his website of his new teeth. I was waiting for something much more exciting than that.
Wow. I guess I missed that one.
And by the way, this is before the DVR. I did not record that, but I'm hoping that someone maybe has that tape somewhere. TCMediaNow.com. So you went to Channel 5 and investigations. And do you recall some of the big pieces you were doing at that point? Some of the big investigations that you were working on?
Well, there was a mix of stories that, you're right, where some were for sweeps. Mm-hmm. Others were more or less daily stories.
Sure.
That maybe we'd spend a couple days on, but mm-hmm. really not running as part of a promoted sweeps deal.
Who was your talent at that point? I'm trying to remember who was actually doing investigations at that point. Was Ross Curtis there, or was it?
No, not in the unit. I think he might have still been around the newsroom at that point, but the investigative unit when I went was Bob McNaney.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Kristen Steiner. We had a producer, Mike Maybe, and a couple of photographers, Tim Jones and one other.
And these are stories you're working on for weeks, I assume, correct?
Some of them were. Others were maybe more intended for a daily newscast, but maybe you'd need to spend a couple of days on them. But they weren't necessarily of the magnitude of a major sweeps piece, for instance.
Because you take that back about 10 years ago, those were working for months, and they would
Right.
I mean, I can't know how they could hold on to those things until February and do a five night part series of whatever
right.
investigation it was.
And I will say the process there at that time was very, very good. You're right, the reporters would work on some of those stories for quite a while, and I would be involved with them through the process and kind of assess where they're at. Then they'd write a script, and I would go over that with them. But at some point, if it was any kind of a controversial story, the company's attorney was right upstairs, and we'd spend a lot of time in review.
Yeah, this is, Channel 5 is really the only local ownership in town. You had, not only did you have your station manager up above, you had the owner, the CEO of the company, you had, someone who was running a big satellite company, Conus, right over 2 floors up. What was the advantage and, I'll say, the disadvantage of having that happen?
I think the advantage, which was huge on a day-to-day basis, was making resources available. If you wanted to fly someplace for a story mm-hmm. or spend some extra time or money, they're very good and very aggressive in that regard, and it was easy to get approval for resources to put good stories together. It was also interesting at times to have the ownership right upstairs. They're paying attention. They're watching the product you're putting out, and if they have questions, they're going to give you a call.
And by the way, I've been to the Channel 5 studio a couple times, and one thing that I take away from that is we were just discussing the Channel 4 newsroom. There's still an element of that Channel 5. There's a lot of wood paneling on the walls when you go into the lobby or even you go to the CEO's office. There's still a Time Warp piece to the Channel 5. In the Channel 5 lobby, I love the green tile floor
yeah.
you walk in.
Yeah, I know. I like that too. It's very retro.
There's a throwback to that. It's the by the way, I mention this all the time. Stanley Hubbard did not get into the Broadcast Hall of Fame by not creating really innovative products
right.
here in the Twin Cities.
Right.
Huge. And ratings don't always reflect that, but he did. He's done some good things. Occasionally, there could be some question of things that didn't work out so great, but
right.
him and his father did. Did create a lot of opportunities in broadcasting in this community.
Right. Over the years, pretty solid track record.
So after that, Channel 217 didn't have a job offer for you,
right.
so you went to the vast world of academics.
I did. I went to the U of M, taught there for 5 years, and it was very interesting.
Now, did you go to them thinking, like, okay, I need to do something. What do you have for me to do? Or did they come looking for you?
The timing was right for me, and they were looking for an adjunct just to teach mm-hmm. one class at that point. But what happened was, this was early 09, maybe late 08.
Mm-hmm.
The economy had just tanked.
Yeah.
There were some layoffs at KSDP. Yeah. I was one of them.
Yeah.
And so, but on the flip side, someone there might have heard about me leaving KSDP, but they needed somebody to teach one class, very small deal. So I did it for the spring semester that year.
I'd never taught before.
Nope. And then over the summer that year, then they were looking for a full-time instructor, so then I was hired on to teach the following academic year.
And tell me about the day-to-day. So you're teaching now. Were you teaching the process of production, or are you teaching actual broadcast on air? What were you teaching?
I was teaching. I did have a production class, but not every semester. But a lot of it was the peculiarities of writing for television. Mm-hmm. They were learning basic reporting in their other classes. But for me, I would teach them how to take those skills and apply them in a visual setting, and how to write to match your pictures and that kind of thing.
So I may ask a question. So you're teaching this class, and what were the class sizes at that point? Were they 10, 30, 40?
They were maxed out at 20.
Okay. When you're doing production, you rarely are in audience. You know, there's very few town hall meetings that you were probably, you know, producing for. So now you walk right in this classroom, you see 20 beaming eyes looking at you. Was there a little bit of a, okay, I need to say something clever, brilliant, and actually create a good product here every single day now, live?
Right. Yeah, there's a little of that, mm-hmm. especially early on. You know, once you do it a while and you kind of figure out what works and what doesn't, it got a little better. But you're absolutely right. At the beginning, it's like, what am I doing here? What do I have to offer these guys?
Obviously quite a bit, because you don't do the 5 years without offering something. So what was your biggest reward by doing that?
You know, what's great is to see certain people get it all of a sudden and take mm-hmm. off, and then to see them go out and... I have former students now all over the place at stations, and
that's
to see them become successful is very great.
Very transient business, you know.
Yeah.
I love the bios of how many Sioux City, Iowa, and you know, Montana pedigrees people had before they came here. And there's a few of us here that have been lucky enough to be able to do all of our broadcasting here in Minnesota, you being one of them.
Right.
Which I'm sure you know, it's a very rarity to be able to have
very.
The opportunities you had, but
yeah.
not unearned. You brought two artifacts. I want to talk about those. You brought an artifact. I may say the term artifact loosely. It could be from last year. But you brought this poster in. It's Dave Moore on a bicycle. And
yep.
he signed it in 1979. Now, this is before you worked there.
Actually, it was 90. It was when
91. You're right.
91.
Yep. Okay.
Right. I was leaving the station to go to KMSP. And so this would have been December of 91.
Heard the date wrong. I apologize.
Oh, no problem. But, no, I was walking through the station and passed a... wastebasket that was full of old promotional material, and so I started looking at it, and this one was Dave Moore on a bicycle, and it just said, Dave Moore, your friendly neighborhood newscaster. I asked him to sign it for me, and he did, and you know, as it turns out, it's one of my most treasured things now.
That is a good poster. You can see some of these occasionally on the internet, but it's kind of black and white, not a caricature, but it's a photograph of Dave and talked about the scene tonight. And I think the most shameful thing is someone was throwing that away.
Oh, I know.
And Dave's still there, and you know, it's Dave's legendary, and people are throwing that thing away. Then you brought his book also in today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great book. Just the one I have is letters that he wrote back to viewers, and. A lot of funny stories in there.
In that book, you can find the book, I think it's on Amazon, or you can find it at, you know, Half Price Books, probably. It's a great book. I actually have it, too, and I know a lot of people on the Facebook page have been mentioning that. Yeah, we were talking before the show started, and I recommend anyone that has been on production, you know, on air, off air, or, you know, recorded TV, don't throw it away. There's just so much history out there that we're throwing away.
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure you get asked people, you know, from people, do you know that story you guys did 30 years ago? I was on it. I don't remember the date of it, but I remember that I was doing that. Can you pull it up for me?
Right, yeah. I'll find it right now.
You know, surprisingly, there are tapes out there, and I'm not convinced I've scorched the earth for all the tapes yet, and they're out there. But, you know, the CCO New Digs video that came from someone's beta tape collection, and someone has said that they really wanted to record the history of Channel 4 studios, the new studio, so great video. And I'm glad we were able to watch it today.
Absolutely, so much fun to look at.
So what's next? You're doing some consulting now, working on some stations right now, you're still in the business.
Yeah, I'm taking projects as they occur to me. I did some work at a station in Des Moines over the summer, last summer. They were in an ownership transition, they had empty positions, and I went just helping to keep the newsroom running for a while. So that was a chunk of the summer. I'm working with some smaller stations around the area and just trying to help them out with their news.
And it's just like the first day, the first day you get the newsroom and figure out what it is, what are you good at, what do you need help with, and how can you impact it?
Yeah, it's just a blast.
Dana Benson, thank you so much. We can do this for another 3 hours, but I appreciate your time today. We'll have you back again sometime.
Thanks very much.
This is Tom Oz, and we'll be back next Saturday here in Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB.